Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, love me and embrace me. It's the Football Ramble, and Pete's here.
Oh, Agwan!
Luke is here.
Yeah, what's popping? I'm Ryan Ricketts.
And James or Jim's here.
Charmed.
Thank you, James. A bit of order at last. The African Cup of Nations is underway.
Yeah.
That's the inspiration for the opening question, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favourite goal scored by an African footballer?
Are you talking to me first? You directed the question at me.
Go to Pete first, because I haven't got one. But I will have one by the time it comes to me.
Pete, what have you got for us?
I'm going for the legendary best goal in the last 20 years, according to me, goal from a few months ago. The Didier Drogba finish from
mental.
Well, I didn't go mental. I said it was a brilliant goal.
You said the best goal has ever been scored
in the last 5 years.
I'm downgrading it to
a
suitable
on 20
answer.
Then went down to 5 years.
You were crying as you were telling us about it, as I remember.
One hand on the keyboard.
All right, it's a goal suitable to enter into, to be the response to Marcus's question in this week's Football Ramble.
Yeah.
That's how good the goal is.
We're wonderful talking stuff. For Chelsea against Everton, was it?
Bolton. Yeah. Oh,
it was a few little flicks and stuff, and then Drogba finished it with aplomb. He knew where the goal was, he knew where the space was, he knew where to put it, Marcus.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The sign of a true striker. Yeah. James.
Well, there's a couple to pick out. There's an obvious one, but I'm sure one of you guys is going to take that, so I'll leave it. And I'm going to go for another obvious one, which is Tony Yeboah against Liverpool.
Well, yes, of course.
Absolutely incredible volley. Yeboah!
Yes, of course. I mean, these are all Premiership African goals. The points...
Would you want African League goals?
Hearts of Oak. Hearts of Oak are my favourite goal.
Kaiser Chiefs, they're a big fan of them.
No. It's just that, you know, I'm adopting a more of a Ferenc Puskás award policy for these points, you see.
Well, I'm going to go for George Weah's goal for Milan.
Thought you might do.
Or as other people would say, Milan. When he ran from his own goal area in that and beat loads of people and stuck it in. We talked about it so often, there's no point even saying it again, but that's mine.
It was a beauty.
If I don't get the points, I'm kicking off.
Well, you're going to be kicking off. I'm quite disappointed by your selection, gentlemen, I have to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a poor one.
So let me kind of get the ball rolling properly. I'm going to go for... Roger Mears first, or Roger Miller. But Barry Davis always called him Roger Mears, so that's why
good
I always...
enough for me.
Exactly, yeah. But Roger Miller's first against Colombia in the second round of World Cup 90.
Lovely stuff.
And I'm going to have an honourable mention to Sully Muntari, who scored...
Oh, that was an absolute pinger!
You see, you've completely missed the last time round in the African Cup of Nations. A great goal by Zidane for Egypt.
Yeah,
I think it was against... Cameroon, it might not have been, but it was in their group.
This is really your area of expertise, though, Mark.
Well, absolutely.
Rigged.
Yeah.
you say this every week, rigged. The point of this, whoever wins, everyone else says it's rigged.
Yeah, well, you can't give them to yourself every week, can you?
I'm just glad I have the support and sympathy of all the listeners. but Muntari, when he scored the absolute peach from about 25, 30 yards for Ghana in the last minute, when they absolutely battered Guinea.
Yeah.
Guinea equalised completely against the runner play. They couldn't score. He put his fag out. Bang.
Were you in Accra when that goal went in?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was in the city.
Yeah.
Perhaps influenced it.
The Football Ramble goes to these places, so you don't have to.
Yeah. Can I have an honourable mention?
Go on.
You're not African.
No.
And you never scored a goal.
Aha, that's what you think. No, I'm going to go for JJ Okocha for an honourable mention. Because do you remember that goal he scored against West Ham? Which I think he picked it up quite far into his own half as well and just ran around loads of players, belted it from far out.
I'll tell you, to be honest though, I know it's sort of a bit current and we're nowhere near the best goal, African goal ever or whatever, but Kanute's header for Mali.
Yeah, lovely one.
Yes, that was a lovely one.
We'll move on to that, I'm sure. Okay. But first, I've got to give myself the points.
Okay, well done.
Roger Meir's goal definitely is going to win that. And easy peasy, listeners.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you could have gone for Rigger Bear Song.
Yeah, good one.
Cheaty David, the the Nigerian striker of the 90s.
Or Johnny Stitchup. Yeah, he's got a couple.
Honestly, it's an ambush. Let's move on to the Premier League, because there was a couple of games on the weekend, although a lot of it was snowed off. Mm. Although I'd heard that Chelsea, they were at home at Stamford Bridge, obviously they didn't play, but the report said the pitch was fine. Yeah. It was just the roads outside were a bit dangerous.
Mm. You do that. Well, surely that's a responsibility of people, because the Arsenal match was going to be called off because of Holloway Road.
But Arsenal,
what?
Yeah. Arsenal went ahead, and a friend of mine lives around Stamford Bridge, and he said it was fine.
I've got a mole in East London as well who told me that West Ham was fine.
Yeah, well, there's reports in the newspapers today about that as well.
Oh, okay.
I think it's because I think people won't come out, and so they won't make any money on merchandise and food and stuff, and then they have to still pay the policing costs and stuff like that. I think that would be my cynical take on it.
And West Ham haven't got any fit strikers.
Yeah, you've got Chelsea, for example, who know that if they get a game postponed, that's one less game they're not missing African Nations players, you know,
Yeah, clever.
What are you going to say, PT?
I was just going to say that a couple of seasons ago, Middlesbrough and Newcastle were supposed to be playing a football match, but then Borough called it off at the last minute. And it,
relegated, didn't they?
They got a points deduction.
Oh, they did, yeah.
No, after that. Not for that, though.
Oh, it was another one, wasn't it?
But they called it off because of the icy conditions outside the pitch. But it was just it was clear that it was just utter trash. And their side was decimated by injuries. And it was just a clear, without wanting to sound too labyrinth. But it was a complete.
It's not a football club's responsibility how people get to the ground.
Exactly.
You know, it's silly. I mean, Henry Winter actually said something which I agreed with.
That's an appropriate name.
Henry Winter, exactly. Yeah, he felt authoritative to speak on the matter.
as opposed to Jeff Winter, maybe.
And he was saying that, you know, when you go to any public event, it's not the event's responsibility how you get there.
What are the rules on that if somebody falls down and cracks their head?
Well, in the venue, it's obviously down to the venues or the company's public liability. But it's not, you know, if I'm going out my front door to go and watch Pompey play and I fall up the step, which I have done, you know. Yeah. I didn't sue Pompey because that's the reason step. I'm leaving the house. Tricky, you know,
you sue Carl.
Broken Britain.
Yeah. No, I mean, any football ground is, you know, it's hard to get out of, but you're not going to have too much of a challenge. Do you know what I mean?
No,
you're going to manage it.
Exactly.
Mm. Well, Birmingham managed it.
They did,
and they got a good point off Manchester United. Mm.
Teams almost seem a little bit frightened of Birmingham at the moment because they're so sort of emphatically the form team, if that makes sense. They know they're going to be in for a rough
game. 12 unbeaten or something now, isn't it? They played all right as well. To be honest, they're under the cosh for the first sort of 35-40 minutes. Sucker punched United a little bit. Because United looked vulnerable at the back. And then obviously the Man United sort of hit back. But it's weird. Most United don't really. Does anyone else think that sort of a few years ago, or even two seasons ago, Manchester United, that's the sort of game they would sort of play a little bit badly and scrap it, but they'd still win it.
We said this before, but they didn't lose.
No.
And they're still up there.
But, I mean, how many games have they lost this season already? Quite a lot.
Five.
Yeah, in the league. That's just in the league, though, isn't it? Yeah.
They have won the league from this situation before, though, haven't they?
Yeah.
Being that sort of points tally. But it is going to be quite a low-scoring season anyway, though, isn't it? A low-point season anyway, though, isn't it?
Do you know what I think? I think The way that teams play Manchester United now has changed. It used to be sort of stick a load of men behind the ball, which Birmingham did sort of do. But from what I can see, and feel free to shoot me down here, fellas, I think that teams who attack Manchester United now are generally more successful because they're less likely to be caught on the break because Manchester United have not got as much pace as they did have. With Giggs doesn't play that much anymore. Cristiano Ronaldo's moved on.
They were devastating on the counter attack. Yeah. United, they always have been. You know, as you say, Ronaldo's not there, Tevez is not there, and they were pretty good at that. So maybe that's a factor.
And they've also got Wes Brown at the back, I guess.
Always
Wes Brown.
Fletcher was sent off. Alex Ferguson was fuming about that.
Well, the first challenge was so reckless. The second one was just clumsy, but I don't think...
Well, Mark Clattenburg said...
It wasn't even for the challenge, was it? But the challenge was terrible.
Mark Clattenburg said there were two yellow cards for Fletcher. In the first half, he was bollocks for dissent. I warned him for dissent. He was cautioned before half-time for a foul. Then he cynically tripped the Birmingham player.
Well, the first challenge, as James rightly says, he... he was it against, was it on Bowie?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right,
he was going back towards his own goal, and Brown was going to get no... Oh, sorry, Fletcher was going to get nowhere near the ball. It was a silly challenge. He didn't need to make the challenge at all. Yeah. And the second one was a little bit cynical, and, you know, you've seen them... You've seen those sort of challenges be booked loads. So I just don't know what Ferguson's playing at, moaning all the time. Mm. You've got to remember, Ferguson's already on a suspended ban for a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. It was just great watching Ferguson shout at the linesman, and then shout at the fourth official, yeah. And then the fourth official lifting up the bar to say yes. 6 minutes.
84 minutes.
See, I think credit has to go to the linesman and the referee for deciding to allow the goal in the end, having a bit of a discussion about it and not just making a knee-jerk reaction. Yeah.
Why did the linesman do that? Because, I mean, it was about the player not being offside. Was it...
Well, it was an own goal in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm baffled as to why the flag was up in the first place.
I think it was because Rooney was offside, but he wasn't interfering.
No, the way I saw it was nobody was offside, but a man was down injured. Perhaps the linesman was flagging
for
that.
Right, OK. Well, it's ultimately the referee's final decision anyway. Yeah. I mean, the assistant referee helps, doesn't he? And
such is the game of football.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
A good point or a bad point for Arsenal at home?
In the circumstances, a good point, I suppose, but... That, I mean, this is going to kind of underpin Arsenal's season, I think. If Arsenal want to put in a serious title challenge, you've got to win that game. Do you know what I mean? You've got to close that gap and take advantage of your game in hand. And in that sort of context, it's not a great point. It's a really chaotic game, though. Yeah. It was two deflected goals from Arsenal. And it's something that's really interesting. They're really missing Alex Song. Leon Osman completely sort of unmarked for the first Everton goal. And... Song is the player on set pieces who sort of he doesn't have to mark anyone. He has a bit of a free role and he just goes in and he attacks the ball. And Song wasn't there. There was no one to go and do that, and we conceded a goal. So it's interesting to see sort of what an impact Song has had, like, which you very much notice in his absence. It's a lovely sort of improvement.
Lovely finish from Pienaar, and Landon Donovan was playing.
Landy Cakes.
Yeah.
Apparently that's what they call him in America, isn't it?
I think that
played well.
I think Song and Diaby have massively improved.
Yeah, Nasri too has really picked up.
What do you think? Donovan, he was saying that he looked a very, very satisfied man in the interview after the match.
I think he's one of those players who, when he's moved overseas from the US to other places, he seems to be one of those players who struggles a little bit.
Yep.
You know, it's not for everyone. You know, as we always say, like, players aren't robots. It's not like you go to a different club and then you can't play there because of whatever reason, you're automatically not good enough. I mean, when he was in Germany, he obviously struggled to adapt, which is a big factor for a player when they move so far away.
But do you think maybe that he comes over, he's from America, and obviously there's certain stereotypes about Americans in football. And
many
so,
perpetuated by us.
Yeah. But it's very, maybe hard. It's maybe hard for them to get a fair crack of the whip. And if he doesn't speak the language, he just might find it very hard, and he's not really a part of it. Whereas at least he's speaking the language. If he's got a bit of banter, a bit of chat, maybe he's just feeling a bit more part of it. I don't know.
Well, culturally, I think that Britain's obviously got a lot more in common with America. You've got the language. Don't forget, he can also pick up the phone to sort of Clint Dempsey or Jozy Altidore or someone like that. So he knows players in and around the game in this country anyway. You can help him out.
Tim Howard.
You know, I don't think that clubs in England or Germany, or Tim Howard especially, the same club. I don't think that sort of European nations don't take American footballers seriously.
Well, no, I'm not saying that.
I mean, it probably was the case in the past.
I think that, as I say, the stereotypes are there, but if he can try and talk down those stereotypes, then that's going to give him a better chance and not being able to get in because doesn't speak any language or anything.
Yeah.
Well, let's not forget that he has moved into an Everton side, this putting a little bit of a run together. I mean, won like 3-3 on the bounce and then that result, I believe.
Yeah.
But I think it's just too early for signings. I've just finished New Year's and I can't deal with Vieira being at Man City. I can't deal with him being there. I'm finding it all too much.
Well, interestingly enough,
I've still got turkey sandwiches to eat, if I'm completely honest. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, Pete, a friend of mine was in Jamaica on New Year's Eve.
Did he go on his own?
Pardon?
And, on his own accord.
Yeah, Jamaica. See what he's done there, Jamaica.
If I may. And in the same hotel was Bruce Arena.
Oh, right.
Okay.
And he got talking to him. He says he's a lovely lad. And he said to him, what's all this nonsense about, you know, D-Beck playing right back for Milan and so on, because there was talk of that. And he said, Bruce just said, he's not a defender.
Didn't he say, like you'd know, American, lols.
He said he was a nice guy. They had a lovely chat. He said Beckham, Bruce Arena was saying Beckham was a top man. Confirmation once again.
Yeah.
Arsenal drew with Everton. Vieira, as you say, Pete, has gone to City.
Yes.
I don't think that's a terrible signing. Everyone else seems to.
No, on the contract they've got, I think that's ideal for City.
I think it's a good sign.
A bit of sort of Premiership steel, bit of experience.
Who's saying it's a bad signing?
Well, some people...
Name and shame.
I've read a number of reports that have said it's too much money for his age, he can't stay fit.
How much are they paying him?
100 grand a week or something?
Yeah, that's too much.
But money, it's no object to City, is it? You've got to look at it like that. It's not like it's going to sort of damage them in any way at all to pay that much money.
If he looks at SWP and goes, how much are you earning? Yeah. If I'm not earning more than you, that's not
fair. I reckon there is a bit of that going around. There must be at City, yeah.
Can I have you as mini-me? I won't play unless.
I think they could do it a bit, a decent sort of... You know, look, the most important thing about Vieira is he knows how to win a Premier League title, you know, and there's not an awful lot of players in that team do. So that's a massive bonus for them.
As long as it doesn't affect Stephen Ireland adversely, that's all I worry about.
Stephen Ireland doesn't
about...
play enough for me.
Yeah. That's very true. I don't think he could play enough for me. But interestingly with Vieira, though, it is going to be sort of, interesting to see what kind of player he is now. Because obviously, you know, he's been at Inter and he's not been playing. It's been a long time since we've regularly seen Vieira. And, I mean, Lee Dixon was saying that when he was at Arsenal, he took a lot longer to recover from games than even some of the older players. And I remember someone saying, because Vieira's got one leg longer than another.
That's
and
right.
Apparently, if players have that, it really affects them in their sort of the last stage of their careers, and it's going to be good to see what sort of
he wouldn't get into Milan. That's they got a rigorous medical situation as we said before.
But with Vieira, I mean, he was kind of losing his legs at the back end of his
Arsenal
career.
I think he
seemed a lot more sluggish. But maybe his time away has made him like deal with that, I suppose, and become a slightly different player. I
think that's the key. I don't think we're going to see the marauding Vieira that was at Arsenal
that would sort of
be box to box. He's probably going to be sort of very, very defensively minded. Mm. But
he'll have to be in that midfield anyway. But I think you're right, Pete, because I can remember thinking when he went to Italy, oh, that's a good move for him, because like you guys were saying, he's lost a yard of pace. But if he's got good players, quick players around him, he has got the experience, and I think he's got a good head on his shoulders for the majority of the time, as long as he doesn't play as Roy Keane, who's retired now. So, I think that's an okay sign. And like you say, James, I mean, it's worth remembering that money is no object to City, so the amount he's getting paid is pretty irrelevant. Mm.
I like that picture that you sent, Luke, of to me, Marcus and Jim, with somebody who's thrown a snowball at Rabinho.
Oh, Michael Richards. right in the kisser.
Almost punching him with a snowball, though, really.
And you know Michael Richards is going to be quite a strong man.
Yeah.
So that's going to be one of those ones where you sort of laugh because you don't want to be a twat about it. But inside you're thinking, God, that really actually...
I really want to cry.
That felt a bit icy. Mm. More than snow.
Is there a dog poo in there?
You know, like when you get hit in the face with a football, it's happened to everyone. It's the most painful thing that can possibly happen.
I saw a guy, a good friend of mine actually,
kidney stones,
Jason Blake.
Worse, I think.
Apparently, that's the worst pain a man can feel. Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, well, apparently it's like giving birth. I've heard.
Anyway, this guy I know, he got booted in the face on the volley.
Is it R. Berkovich?
With a ball from about 2 yards away, and it knocked him clean out.
Really?
It knocked him unconscious. Yeah.
Darren Ferguson.
Can be dangerous.
Duncan Ferguson.
Damn.
I always get that wrong.
There's a little rumour going around about Sol Campbell and Arsenal.
Not having it.
There's lots of rumours going around about Sol Campbell.
Yeah, well, that's why I linked that to Arsenal. That's why I was quick to say Arsenal.
The most obvious sort of block in the way of that move is, does anyone know where he actually is? Has anyone seen him recently?
I think he's stepped into another dimension. Yeah. I think he's become a cloud. A cloud of Sol. A cloud of Sol is drifting across Brazil as we speak.
Has he done an Alan Partridge and driven to Dundee with no shoes? He's on a breakdown.
In Toblerones.
Let's not make light of mental health issues.
No, but the talk is that if Wenger can get rid of Senderos, then he's going to bring Campbell in. Which, I mean, he's been training with Arsenal, so he must see some sort of value in him. Yeah, but I think maybe he's there to sort of kind of be a sort of sensible older head for the younger players.
I mean, he knows how to win a Premiership title, so.
Oh,
you know.
Shut up. Senderos is a fucking bald-headed penalty monkey. Shouldn't be nowhere near a Premier League side, if you ask me.
Well, that moves us neatly onto Owen Coyle and Bolton.
How?
justify that link.
Then I get from bald-headed penalty monkey to Owen Coyle.
To the Lancashire Sinatra.
Excuse me. It's all too funny. Owen Coyle has gone to Bolton. This was nearly a done deal last time we recorded the show, but it's gone through now, and he said it's an unbelievable challenge. Mm-hmm. He's right.
No, I can believe it. Yeah, it's not unbelievable.
Why
is
it? Come along, you literally long.
Yeah, well, I think they had to sort out the compensation for Burnley, who wanted a sizeable amount. I don't know who they're going to get.
He's taken his backroom stuff as well, hasn't he?
He's even taken the kit man, Pete, which has caused a lot of consternation at Burnley. But I mean, maybe it's a situation. Owen Coyle's got to think about Owen Coyle.
Oh, hang on.
Yeah. I was waiting for your reaction there.
Who? Owen Coyle, is he?
Well, Coyle said himself earlier on in the season when Burnley played Bolton, I think they got a draw, and he said, well, Bolton have got three times the budget. So has he taken Burnley as far as he can? It's a blow for them, and it's interesting that he turned down Celtic, but he's agreed to go to Bolton.
Yeah. Well, he did say, didn't he, it would be Bolton and Celtic were the only clubs he would have left Burnley for.
He made it clear that he wasn't motivated by personal finances because, as he said, he turned down the job at Celtic, you know.
Well, he got paid a lot of money at Celtic then.
Oh, he would have done.
But it's not an awful lot of money in Scottish football, is there?
The Celtic are pretty
well.
Celtic
have got quite a bit.
But, you know, the thing is, the interesting thing that people were talking about was that he didn't... I know he's got like affinity with Bottom because he was a player there, but I don't think he played an awful lot. I mean, he was there for a long time, but he didn't sort of rack up 400 games from anything like that.
I remember
that.
Him playing very well for them when he was there. Because I think he was a bit of a fan's favourite, and maybe that's part of it.
I think he scored in a playoff final. He definitely scored at Wembley for them.
Did he? Okay.
If you would. I think... I completely understand Owen Coyle's thinking, obviously. I think we all do. But I always think it's a bit of a shame, you know, because he is doing so well at Burnley and stuff's really happening there. And I just loved him to stay.
Yeah.
But I can understand it all completely.
Maybe he'd sort of seen the club grow to a Premiership club, but he just sort of couldn't... He couldn't see the money coming. He just couldn't... He just knew that he'd never have the money to challenge for anything. Well, and with Bolton, possibly...
No, I understand. I mean, you know, we've said before, you know, you do the best with the talent you have, and if he can progress his career, then absolutely you would never begrudge a manager, especially a sort of a youngish manager, to do that. But
well, he said himself that he'd looked into it and the funds weren't there for him to strengthen if he kept Burnley up. So it was always going to be a case of firefighting.
I think that if he stays there for the rest of the season and they stay up, what's he going to do next season? They're going to stay up again. He's not going to stay there forever unless they get some really significant investment. And if he's got designs, I'd know in the future. I mean, he's still quite a young man. He's about 43, I think. Mm. If he's got designs in 10 years' time to be Scotland national manager, or even, you know, take a big job either here or overseas, then he's really got to prove himself at more than one club. Yeah. You know, and I don't blame him for it. I don't blame him for moving.
No, not at all.
I do think that Burnley fans are a little bit... They've got every right to be a bit aggrieved. I know what it's like being a fan of a club whose manager leaves and goes to bigger clubs. It's just the way it goes. I don't think Bolton are probably a bigger club than Burnley, I'd say. Maybe only slightly, but they are.
Yeah.
And they've got a bigger budget. I mean, they're in Europe reasonably recently. So, and Burnley, it's not something Burnley can sort of boast. So I'll say good luck to him, you know. Mm. And hopefully Burnley fans will sort of thank him for all the work he's done for them and wish him well.
The Liverpool fans be thanking Hicks Jr. for all the work he's done. He's just left.
What
the
work has he actually done apart from like, abuse fans?
If you can leave a job so quickly, like clear your desk. I don't have a desk.
There's been no handover going on there. Isn't there?
You're gonna have to resign from the board. Yeah, I still don't really know what that means.
I'm on the board.
Yeah, I've just been sending emails. it's almost like. Yeah, you can't say that.
In case anyone hasn't actually heard about this, it was a fan sent him an email, wasn't it? So apparently it wasn't even that abusive in tone, although we haven't seen it, but it was sort of just questioning the sort of financial future of Liverpool. And he sent one reply that just said, idiot. And then what was the next one?
Blow
me, fuckface. Yeah. I'm sick of you.
Yeah. Sick of him. You can't say that effectively as someone who's speaking on behalf of the football club.
No, absolutely not.
I've abused my fair share of listeners over the years. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I would never
sometimes
be that extreme.
Physically.
You know? I always try to see it from their point of view, you know?
I kind of like it, kind of.
Oh, it's funny.
Just outspoken. Yeah. I like outspoken chairmen and people like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, not to the level of sort of saying that all the women in the town are ugly.
No, yeah.
And we take advantage of them every time they buy a replica shirt.
That was a scandal.
I mean, that's right, genuinely scandalous, but
who
just telling one
Shepherd,
Newcastle, who sort of went and then came back. So maybe this guy will come back and treat us to more.
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that happens in South America all the time.
Oh, yeah, you know. But you got to remember that
we're
like,
starved of this.
The Hicks family aren't exactly well loved at Liverpool in general.
No, they're not.
No, apparently not.
It is also worth pointing out that the supporters group, I think they're called Spirit of Shankly.
They are, yeah.
I think it was last year, they were caught on video at some function they were having singing that disgusting song about Munich. So, talking about upholding the values of the club in the boardroom and on the pitch and in the terraces, blah 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 blah. That doesn't seem very moral to me.
I would never like to say that they're completely blameless in the whole thing, but you know, they sort of get a little bit more leeway to say what they want, haven't they? Whereas the guy who's speaking on behalf of the football club,
yeah, of course, yeah.
The African Cup of Nations is underway. Unfortunately, just before the tournament, obviously, there was a tragedy with the Togo national team. I'm sure we've all seen all that on the news and so on, and absolutely awful stuff. And they're not going in the tournament now. They went back to Togo, and then there was talk of them perhaps re-entering the tournament, but I understand it is that not happening now.
Time of recording, that's definitely the case.
That's right, yeah. But the tournament has got underway, and what an unbelievable start. I mean, it's...
Angola, I texted you, didn't I?
You did. You texted me saying it was Angola versus Mali. And you said it's a great start for the Black Antelopes.
15 minutes to go. They're 4-0 up.
I was 11 minutes to go, I believe.
Was it 11 minutes to go? Yeah. I texted him, it was about 15 minutes left. And I turned that over and I thought, that's done and dusted now.
4-0.
I'll get involved with a bit of the darts, won't I?
you deserve to.
What's wrong with you?
I've had a stinker.
Rule number one, leave before the final whistle.
I even flicked back and just in time to see Kanute's header, which is an absolute beauty.
But, like, the first...
I still thought it was a consolation. I thought, that's it.
Well, the first Mali goal was a keeper error. I mean, again, if
terrible.
The keeper holds that, does it end 4-0?
No, exactly,
You know, that's the beauty.
It was
some of the beauty. But life as well, Pete.
The defending, abysmal. In every game I've seen. Actually, no, to be fair, the Ivory Coast Burkina Faso game, Burkina Faso were quite resolute. They're under pressure a lot, and they managed to give a clean sheet.
Yeah.
But the... Well, the Angola-Mali game...
It's just wonderful stuff.
The Malawi-Algeria game.
But someone said to me, that four-all there, with four goals in the last sort of 11 minutes plus stoppage time, it couldn't happen in any other tournament.
It was 4-2 in injury time.
Yeah.
That's called 2 in injury time, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, there was one point where Angola took kick-off, and there was... They scored in, like, I think I timed it, 92 minutes 25 seconds.
Yeah. 4 minutes
That was for
time.
4-3.
Yeah.
And, like, Angola had the ball...
And in the corner.
Yeah, exactly. You've got the ball, you shouldn't be. And then it was 4-3, and they must be thinking, right, let's just keep the ball.
They had
the ball in the 93rd minute.
Yeah.
How have they lost that
game?
Well,
94th minute, you mean?
Well, yeah, okay.
They've just panicked. I mean, I think what's happened is, like you say, with the goalkeeper error, I think as soon as you concede a goal, it'll start to prey on your mind. And all of a sudden, it's almost like it's happening. There's nothing you can do about it.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
At the end of the day, those are the best footballers in the country.
Oh, yeah, of course. They should know what they're doing.
Absolutely. But I love the African Cup of Nations. It just throws up all that sort of stuff. It's quite weird to see a more sort of Portuguese-looking man in goal for Angola.
I've made a bit of a fool out of myself again, because I was saying that, you know, when the World Cup draw came around, I said that Algeria, Slovenia and the USA, they can all hurt us. But I saw Algeria against Malawi... They were abysmal at the back. It was one of the worst defensive displays I've seen for a long time.
I thought Algeria could have maybe... Well, they're not out of it, of course, but I'm very surprised at that.
Absolutely.
Very surprised. Who do you fancy for the whole thing?
I think Egypt.
Do you? Not got the World Cup coming, throw everything at it?
Zaki's sulking, isn't he, after not being picked? Apparently he's just been on like a sort of season-long sulk. It's been a long time since we've heard from him.
Players do that. Mido does that as well, but he also sort of plays every now and then.
Yeah.
He makes it clear to everyone around that he is clearly sulking, but he still takes time to play football sometimes.
Who'd you fancy for it, James?
I think the Ivory Coast have got a good chance.
They're
a very, very strong side. They've never won it. They're going to be motivated by that. I think Drogba's in the form of his career. I know it's quite an obvious one to go for, but I think the Ivory Coast have got a strong chance.
I can't see past Ivory Coast, to be honest. Oh, the fellow who did the fireworks. It seemed to last for days.
It wasn't a particular fella, but I
imagine there was a mastermind behind the fireworks, but it just seemed to go on forever.
Yeah. Okay. It'd probably have some bearing on who wins it.
I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, he really, and James is right about Drogba, but it's almost like a last throw of the dice for him. African Cup of Nations in the World Cup.
And he's never won that as well, which is something that bothers him greatly.
He's going to be exhausted.
I fancy Cameroon myself.
Big
team. Actually, my outside bet was, well, I mentioned Egypt, but I actually sort of had a look at Mali.
You touted Mali before the tournament.
As an outside bet, because they've got three players, one who plays for Sevilla, one at Real Madrid, one at Barcelona.
Yeah.
You know, that's quite something there. That'll
galvanise them, that 4-all.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I mean, when I saw it was 4-0, I thought, well, I'll keep quiet about that.
I remember Angola.
4-all, you see? Yeah.
Remember Angola in the last World Cup, just looking absolutely shocking.
Yeah.
They got beat 1-0 off Portugal, and they weren't too bad in that game.
But they're at home in this tournament. You know, it's opening game. They're obviously well up for it. I think that they probably feel a little bit... I think it would be tough, and I don't really patronise teams who aren't as highly ranked in the FIFA rankings and stuff, who haven't got as much experience in the world stage. But I think for Angola, or for a smaller team, to go to a stage like the World Cup would probably be quite sort of intimidating.
Mm. Yeah.
Think, oh, we're really here now, you know, we're playing against... They line up and see, like, you know, genuinely world-class players, and they think, God, it's almost like when you're playing for the under-12s and you're playing against the team on a Sunday and the other team all look like they're under-15s. You know, you sort of shoot yourself a little bit.
Well, I think we're all looking forward to seeing how that tournament
Well, yeah,
turns
they'll be
out.
Much more comfortable at home, Angola. So they did, I mean, it's unfortunate for them. But that'll really galvanise Mali. They'll feel like they got out of jail there.
Yeah, absolutely. Sticking briefly with international football, we're going to go to Asia. And that's the sound of
that's
Asia.
That's the universal sound of Asia.
to Indonesia, specifically. Apparently there was an Indonesian fan, a football fan, he was very fed up with his national team's lacklustre performance.
I saw this. He looks a bit like you, Marcus. He looks like an Indonesian version of you.
Finished like
handsome
him.
Finished in your face.
Cuss.
Well, he thought that the television obviously needs to see his face, so and they did. It was Indonesia versus Oman, and Oman were 2-1 up. And Hendry Mulyadi, who's 25, he took matters into his own hands.
Yeah.
He wasn't happy about this.
His own feet.
He sprinted onto the pitch, got control of the ball, ran down the wing, attempted to score, but he failed.
The keeper took it really serious.
The keeper kind of played along, which
was annoying.
Great.
It was quite funny, though, because
fantastic.
He took such a long time to make a decision as when to shoot. Yeah. It was a genuinely terrible feeling.
I would expect at least a step over, because he sort of, as he's coming into the 18-yard box, he sort of almost loses control of the ball. I'm like, oh, don't fall over now. And then he gets right in front of the goalkeeper. Just put it either side.
Hits it right at him.
Pick a spot.
Now, we say this concept, but I mean, he was in front of 40,000 people.
I know, but
it's a different thing. But he did manage to say afterwards, he says, I was very disappointed with the Indonesian national team. They never win. It's either lose or draw. So you can understand his frustration.
That's brilliant. I remember something similar happening when Barnsley played Man United and a couple of Barnsley fans got on the pitch when Ben Foster was taking a goal kick.
That,
when I sort of nicked it off him, fell over, but his mate then
he
volleyed it in somehow. They made a real pig's arse out of it.
And he
it in the net,
well,
but they did. Well, the whole crowd went mental. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Well done to them. And to the Indonesian Marcus Speller.
D-Beck.
You waited for total silence. In almost a deliberate defiance to Mr. Pete Donaldson over there, Leonardo's actually moved Beckham further up the field. Right back, Pete Donaldson.
What does Leonardo know?
Yeah.
D-Beck, what's he ever won? What can Leonardo do with a melon that I can't do with a golf
orange
ball? I don't know. I don't know anymore.
He's more handsome than you. I'd rather be sitting across the desk looking at him than you, I'll tell you that. And he speaks better English.
Shall I take over? Milan beat Genoa 5-2, and
David Beckham
was back at Milan looking very, very happy.
It's not hyperbolic to say that he was Zidane-esque in that game.
That left me cry happy.
I'm throwing it out there.
He was not only spraying the ball out like a MFO, he was some of his like flicks and stuff. Where did he learn that?
He didn't actually get
Rose Arena.
he didn't get any assists or goals, but he ran the show for me. Yeah. I don't think he was quite as good as against Juve, but it was still. Mm. I mean, obviously the performance against Juventus in the Dele Alpi was brilliant, but Beckham individually was better against Genoa. They tore him apart. That front six. I mean, I ask you, a front six. Gattuso, Pirlo, Ambrosini, Ronaldinho, Borriello and Beckham. I'm having that all day. I'm off the bench.
A couple of absolutely world-class dives from Ambrosini in that game as well. Absolutely shocking.
Absolutely no pace. It's like watching a team, a really good team from the 1970s. No pace.
Definitely.
Borriello's got a lovely little overhead kick as well.
Yeah, it was a great goal.
To beat Juventus 3-0.
It's great to see Ronaldinho playing well again.
Yeah, he seems... Yeah.
It's like he's listened to
Beckham
it, isn't it? And he's motivated.
It's just wonderful to see Beckham and Ronaldinho...
He's just enjoying his football.
It's like something out of... It's like a bloody video game.
Yeah, it is.
You know, with all your favourite players playing...
I have to say that...
Smiling... Oh, go on, sorry.
Oh, well, one point worth remembering is Genoa are quite a good side, one. And two...
Sorry, Juventus.
Juventus were really poor against Milan.
No, they were. Awesome. Ferrara's maybe...
For the chop, surely. Yeah.
But they're still in the top four.
I don't like that. They're looking for an excuse to get rid of old Ciro. Cheerio Ferrara.
I wish someone had put Del Piero out of his bloody misery. He looks like a sad horse in a field all by himself.
He didn't do much when he came on. I think his time's gone.
Maybe you can go to Stoke with Van Nistelrooy.
Imagine that.
Brilliant.
I tell you what, isn't there a link there with Noel Gallagher? Maybe he can get him to sign up for City. Noel Gallagher and Del Piero are really good mates, aren't they?
Right. Yeah, that's right. They tried to get him over before.
Not happening. But money talks.
Going across the city of Milan, Inter were in a incredible match.
You don't really have to go across the city, you can just stay in the same stadium.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking
geography
about
fans.
The admin headquarters. Oh,
in which case, please carry on.
Thank you very much. They beat Siena 4-3.
What a game.
Yeah, that was a superb game.
I've got a confession to make. I was out of the loop.
Can we turn the mics on?
I was out of the loop. I flicked onto ESPN looking because I knew there was going to be a game on later. Yeah. And they were showing Inter Siena and it was quite in the beginning. And I thought it was live and it was actually a repeat from the day before. So I went on the old Facebook going, Siena have beaten Inter. And everyone was like, what?
Oh, sorry, there's something wrong with my phone. I'm it's delaying my post.
I think I admitted it. I think I just put right. I made a prize twat out of myself. But they were 3-2 down, injury time, weren't they? That Schneider free kick was superb stuff. And then wall to the wall, Samuel. Great finish for a centre back.
It was.
Torino FC. They were relegated last season from Serie A and they're not doing too well in Serie B. I think they're sort of mid-table. But their entire team gathered for a press conference recently, and their captain, David Di Michele, read a statement saying that how groups of players were confronted and assaulted by an angry mob of about 25 fans outside a restaurant.
Disgusting.
Yeah, and a couple of the players, they were slapped about and given threats of death and assaults at home.
Wasn't Man City Hall of Famer Roland Bianchi involved?
He was, yeah. He was one of the players, yeah.
I mean, I think in that situation, that 25 people, that's not that many. The police should be after those individuals and just arresting them. That, you've got to make an example of these people. That isn't acceptable.
No. It seems to happen an awful lot. I mean, I know it famously happened at Lazio, and it's happened at Parma as well, and it always happens in South America. I mean, if you take time to read into sort of some of the players at Corinthians and stuff who've famously got the sort of the most sort of, let's say, passionate fans, and they have like their own personal bodyguards and stuff wherever they leave the house.
I mean, the equivalent is, say, like, you like a band and then they bring out an album you think is shit. It's like you going to their gig, getting on stage and beating them up.
That happened to Noel Gallagher relatively recently.
Well, I was going to say, yeah.
10 years too late.
That's a good judge of character.
Come on.
We're not endorsing that, Pete. We're not endorsing that.
Gentlemen, please, what we need is some kind of a ramble state where none of this
could happen to us. We could put a rubbish ramble out. Before you know it, you get a knock on the door.
Yeah, let's keep that level really low. The level of quality, we'll keep it really low. Yeah. So we can only go up.
We sort of do that automatically, don't we?
Andrea Pirlo is backing Francesco Totti to play at the 2010 World Cup. We talked about Totti when he was thinking about coming out of retirement for the tournament. Well, Pirlo's backing him. But he's raised doubts over Alessandro Nesta's...
Nesta scored at the weekend.
Again.
Yeah.
He scored a couple of goals this season. But Pirlo said, Totti is open to the final solution. Before we leave for South Africa...
An odd choice of words.
They are right wing, aren't they?
They really are.
Nazio. Before we leave for South Africa, he will speak with Marcello Lippi and they will decide together. Yeah. If he comes, then it will be an advantage for everyone. They will decide together.
Yeah.
I love that. However, though,
how's that going to work?
Well,
like, Lippi's going to go, I've decided I'm not going to take you. And Totti's going, well, you're not really seeing it from my point of view, are you?
Yeah. Sure, I've decided you bloody are.
Yeah. But,
that's one each. Let's get Andrea Pirlo and see what he thinks.
Well, we said last week that it's a little bit unfair on those strikers who have kind of worked hard through qualification to get there. And clearly Pirlo's forgotten that about Totti. But he's remembered it about Nesta. He said, well, as for Nesta, he respects the positions of those who sweated during the World Cup qualification.
Good man. Good man.
Yeah, clearly two interviews on two different days.
It's almost like Totti's going to... If Totti doesn't get in the squad because they want to take the strikers that have helped him qualify, it's almost like Totti's going to go, I'm going to go to Sepp Blatter and I'm going to tell him that we need to take an extra player and we're going to decide together. No, where's it going to end?
Or he's just going to turn up until they let him play.
I want to put the 12th man on the pitch for Italy, and me and the referee will decide together.
In La Liga, Barcelona, good win at Tenerife. Great goal from Messi. It was a fantastic goal from, I nearly said from Real Madrid. Of course it was, but it was Higuain.
But did you see Pedro at Barcelona? He was piping up in the press all last week because he's from Tenerife.
Oh, is he?
And he was saying, I can't wait to go back and play against Tenerife. You know, if I score, I won't celebrate. I'm really looking forward to it. All his family turned up and stuff. Guardiola dropped him.
Oh, no.
Apparently, it's talk that he gave him a little bit of a lesson so that, you know, I make decisions around here. Really? And he came off the bench in the end, but it was a good win. Messi got a hat-trick, didn't he?
If anyone saw Sevilla at home to Racing Santander, they would have seen a great performance from Sergio Canales. I think that's
18.
How you say it.
Fantastic.
Two great
superb
goals.
Looks
great
the part, doesn't he?
He does. And Marcus was saying to me actually earlier that, you know, you obviously see players do well when they're young, but he's got some confidence in him, I tell you. Yeah. The way he scored those two goals,
the first chip was just
beautiful.
Well, the second one, he rounded the goalkeeper and then dummied the defender, didn't he? He had a lot to do there.
He did, yeah. He kept a good eye on this. He's got a good eye on this. Is that a turkey? It sounds like a bat.
What?
Emails.
Thank you.
How many bats go...
No, just the end bit. In my head, it's like them coming out of a cave.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's email time. James, I believe you've got one for us.
I do, indeed. With recent talk of the lack of inspiration in goal celebrations these days, I have a scenario for you. Ooh. The Ramble Force has been selected to go to South Africa and you score the goal to win the World Cup. How do you celebrate? That's from Kurt Baker.
What, should we go one after another then?
Yeah, go
who's
for
sorry,
it.
Who's that from? Kurt
that
Baker.
Is from
sorry,
Kurt Baker.
I'm a big fan of the old, if it was a goal this important...
I knew you were going to say this.
Well, you don't know what I'm going to say?
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Go on, say it.
1982, Italy.
No, I'm not going to do that. No, that's cliche.
Well, I'd
like to think if it was the Ramble Force I was scoring for and it was like to win the World Cup, I think I'd leg it, but I'd do the old, come on, call you all over.
Come on,
that one. You know.
Well, what I would do...
It's difficult. It's not really an audio feature, this, is it?
Well, no, what I would do is... I think we talked about it again last week when in the profile... where back in the day when Brazilian players scored, like everyone would gather around them with microphones.
Oh, yeah.
I'd score, I'd get you boys around me, and we'd just do a ramble there and then.
Well, you didn't say, come and meet a goal scorer.
It's probably what I'd do. James, what would you fancy?
Well, if it's the goal to win the World Cup, right, we're going to assume that it's the last kick of the game, the whistle goes just as the ball's gone in the net, we've won. What I would do is I'd celebrate wildly, I'd get everyone down, I'd get Sepp Blatter on the just on the pitch. Right, I'd roll around on the floor, right?
So
he was on his back, yeah. And while he was celebrating and lulled into a false sense of security, I would sharpshooter him.
Why would that? Sepp wouldn't be celebrating your goal.
I'd make him. I'd be so pumped up.
Firstly, you're English, all right?
Logistically, that's a very tough celebration.
Yeah. Secondly, he'd never get down there quick enough.
He had attempted was from King Prawns, lobster. Hey, what would you do?
You could get Jack Warner down there in a flash.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just wave
some
money. Cash,
yeah. I'd probably do a quite a respectful, quiet one. I'd remove a pair of mittens from my shin pads. I'd put them on, run into the dugout, garrote my manager, and then wet myself, and then pop. That's
my area. And that would definitely be one to remember.
To win the World Cup.
That's one to remember.
Everyone would be talking about it. Did you see him? He got the mittens out and then he wore the mittens and then he grotted them out with the string from the mittens.
Presumably, you know, these are all going on at the same time. These celebrations.
I might draw a diagram for online.
My one feels a little bit tame, though.
I reckon, Luke, let's be honest, Luke.
Yeah.
You would remove every piece of your clothing.
Yeah, probably would, actually.
I'd just run out the stadium.
I'd do the Antonio Cassano.
Pick up the World Cup and just go. Yeah.
Be running down the street with it. Yeah.
It's not even a cup!
To cash converters.
Woo! I probably would do an Antonio Cassano, take all my clothes off. Eat loads of food.
Oh, that's a cracking email, that was.
Cheers for that.
I've got a quick email here. Rambleforce Ho. This is from James in Dublin. My brother is gay for you.
Oh, I know that guy. What? He totally is.
That's that one.
Thanks for that.
James from Dublin. Pete, what have you got for us?
This is mine's from Greeny and Simmore from Hull, apparently.
Oh, good boy.
Happy New Year, Ramble Force.
Oh.
Firstly, love the podcast. Keep up the good work. We will certainly try our best. A while back, my mate Simmore and I were partaking in our usual Saturday night ritual, warming up for a late night on the Lash by sinking a couple of beers round at mine, watching a bit of La Liga and putting the world of football to rights.
Of course they were.
Our views became more forthright and extravagant in direct correlation to the number of empty beer bottles filling my coffee table. The conversation turned to a particular pet ear of mine. line. Players with ridiculous squad numbers. For example, William Gallas being a centre-half but wearing a number 10. I hate it.
That annoys me.
Milan
as well.
Barros, number 5, was it?
Mm. Yeah, go.
Nonsense.
Two strikers he played up front for a team that I played for once. Two strikers, brothers they were as well, number 2 and number 3.
Oh. Ronaldo... Ronaldinho.
Number 80, isn't he, or something?
77, was it?
Sickening.
No,
he's 80
now. He's 80.
He moved up.
Anyway, he's going to start, Simo and Green, he's going to start a Facebook group with 101 ways to improve football. Few of their favourites include, all mascots must be at least 6 inches shorter than the player that they are holding hands with. All officials who hand out medals and trophies, etc., must be off the podium before the captain may raise the cup. That's a good point. Four opportunities in that. CONCACAF and CONMEBOL now transcend acronyms and now should be recognised as words in their own right. They deserve a place in the Oxford English Dictionary.
Yeah.
Johnny Lescott's head should be pixelated when on television.
A little bit harsh, I think.
Same applies to Frank Ribéry.
Also very harsh.
All goal celebrations are legal, probably referring to our last email.
Oh, yeah. I think that's fair.
And right. Should be actively encouraged. Only book players when crowd safety is seriously compromised. For example, the corner flag javelin routine, which I've never witnessed.
I think that's a serious point. I know it sort of slows the game down and stuff, but that's what it's all about. As long as you're not endangering crowd safety, you should be allowed to do what you want.
Yeah.
Is he asking how we would do it?
It would be great if the Ramble Force could possibly suggest any contributions of their own.
I would go with something that would easily make the game a whole lot better, and that's that Alex Ferguson. Ferguson?
Ferguson.
Yeah. Alex Ferguson should be solely in charge of how much injury time is the end of each game. Whether Man United are playing or not.
I'd like to see football grounds bringing back pies.
That's a valid point. They don't do it at some grounds we've been to. It's a shame.
It's true.
Yeah. On that, I I can remember a while
ago. I ate a pie. This is Luke Moore's pie review for this one.
It was good again.
I actually had a pie for lunch.
Ten on ten, top class.
Let's make this pie.
Fucker, mate.
No brand names, please.
Oh, sorry.
I saw Sky Sports ran something like this a few years ago, and they asked a manager how they would improve the game, and they came up with some predictable ones like... that shepherding thing they do should be a booking. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. And one was saying, you'd be surprised how much advantage players get from jockeying up the touchline when they're taking a throw in. Just basic standard stuff.
Yeah.
And then David O'Leary piped up with, I swear this is true.
Yeah, he said something stupid.
David O'Leary pipes up with, well, I don't think keepers should be allowed out of the area.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Is that really a priority?
But there was a guy, this was in a magazine, this was way back sometime in the 90s. 2 decades ago.
Yeah.
And he was in charge of Wrexham, I can't remember. And he said, well, I'd abolish the offside rule.
It was just like, what? Well, just for his team?
Yeah, go and play 5-a-side.
Yeah.
I'd bring in head height rule.
No, that's... come on.
Blackburn
would be gutted.
I know, yeah.
I cannot stand...
Allardyce would have to find an...
It would put Fat Sam out of a job. So yeah. So good, I don't mean to have a go at Blackburn, sorry, I shouldn't keep doing that.
No. Yeah. Come on.
Marcus, make a decision. Who's getting the Championship Manager goodie bag?
Kurt Baker,
the World Cup celebrations, man.
Brilliant question.
Well, yeah, well done, mate.
Who encourages us to think we can win a World Cup medal...
deserves it.
Deserves
a Championship Manager. And his name reminds me of like a rude baker, like a Kurt Baker. Get out of my shop.
Yeah.
You've got your bread, now get out.
Yeah.
How are you? Isn't he Kurt?
How are you? Fine.
Well, it's the opening ceremony of the African nation.
Confined to within our studio.
A tenth as long.
It's profile time.
Of course. It's that time of the night.
It is that time of the night. Roberto Carlos.
Oh, what's his full name?
Roberto Carlos da Silva Rocha.
Oh, good.
The big-thighed man is coming in. But first, I must tell you a few things. He was born on April 10th, 1973.
6 years.
Yep.
After the summer of love for new listeners.
Roberto Carlos. Would you call him a living legend? Would you go as far as say legend?
He's on the old Pelé best 125 living footballers.
Must be then. Yeah. Must be.
I would.
a fantastic...
Still gets a giggle.
Yeah. I think he's a living legend. You know why? Because he's about to become a Dean Windass Hall of Fame entrant. That's why.
Mm. Right answer. Mm.
You get the points.
Thanks.
Roberto Carlos began his professional career playing for União São Paulo UAL, a bit of a tricky one, but they're based in São Paulo. Not one of the bigger teams, as I'm sure we haven't heard of them.
Need to sort their name out. They do.
Well, don't judge them. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's important. Brand awareness.
But not Kenyan. Kenyan would know, would he?
But if I may. But even though he was playing for one of the smaller sides, he still got a Brazilian national team call-up.
Oh, yeah.
So he was in there from quite a young age. He moved then to Palmeiras, and that's when he really started to get recognised.
Palmeiras were a decent side, they definitely were then as well.
That's right, and he won two consecutive league titles with them. Sorry, he was at Athletic Mineiro for a very brief time in between there. He had a good time playing in the Brazilian leagues, and he was there for sort of around about 5 years. Mm. So, you know, he earned his stripes, if you like, and he got himself a move to Inter. Mm. I think that's when we all kind of were switched on to this guy.
What year did he move to Inter, Marcus? I'm interested.
He went to Inter in 95.
Yeah.
I forgot he was even there.
Yeah, Hodgson was in town, just.
Yeah.
He was there. Paul Ince was, of course, playing.
Mm. Yeah.
And he put in some good performances for Inter. He became, as I say, quite the player that we all kind of know now. You know?
I think it was more common for Brazilians to at least play a little bit more in their home country. I mean, because he would have been about 22 when he moved to Inter. When you see him moving earlier and earlier these days, which is no good for Brazil, and it's no good for their development, I don't think, either.
That's right.
So he's learned a lot about the game, and at least sort of fully grown into an adult by the time he's moved over to Europe, which I think is important.
Mm. But he was only at Inter for really a season.
Mm.
And then he was off
straight
to
Real.
Real Madrid, where he was at for 11 years.
I mean, that's how we know him best.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, that is an incredible achievement to stay at that club for that amount of time.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Mm.
He was there for 11 seasons, and he played a total of 584 matches, scoring 71 goals.
Good.
You know, for a defender. Although, is he a wing-back or is he a left-back?
Could be a striker, the way he plays.
If you talk to scholars of the South American game, especially in Brazil, they'll say that the traditional full-back role doesn't even exist in Brazil.
That's right.
So it's very difficult to call him a left-back, you know.
Yeah.
He's obviously a very forward-minded player. And can we just say, bags of pace.
Yeah.
Absolutely pacey, yeah.
In 97, he was voted second best player in the world behind Ronaldo, who he played with at Real Madrid, of course. Two of them were Galacticos, one could say.
Can you not remember, it was quite fashionable at one stage by certain people. I don't necessarily agree with this, but to say that, oh yeah, he's good going forward, but he's rubbish at the back.
Yeah.
He really wasn't.
No, he really
wasn't.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you boys, but did he not play for Real Madrid against Manchester United? And when Beckham was in his pomp, and he kept him quiet, yeah. They knocked him out, didn't they?
That was when everybody, a lot of people who were saying that kind of stuff, thought, actually, yeah, he's pretty good at the back.
He's obviously not a traditional defender, but it's one of those
any fullback that scores goals always gets that.
Right, okay. Yeah.
It's good going
forward. Danny Alves gets it now.
Yeah.
It's a similar thing.
Alves, just like we said when we saw him for Barca, basically has the entire side of the pitch to himself.
Yeah. Well, I suppose,
and bosses
Carlos.
It.
Yeah.
But Carlos was kind of like that, because McManaman used to play in front of him for a bit. But McManaman used to kind of drift all over the place, especially inside, and he wasn't left-footed, so he would tend to maybe drift
inside, as I say.
So Carlos used to just, don't worry, pal.
Maraud. Well, I'm marauding. Yeah, do what you want, because I am marauding.
Maybe, maybe that's why McManaman, people said, he never quite did it for England.
Yeah.
Maybe because for England he had, you know, Michael Gray or Phil Neville. Fair enough, they got their England caps, but he's sort of thinking, Carlos.
Carlos is like saying to McManaman, Stevie Mack, do what you want, mate. El Macca, do what you want, because I am raping and pillaging down this flank. And you're either with me or you're against me, pal.
And he's not going to be against him, James, with the same jersey on anyway.
Yeah.
But we have to talk about that free kick he scored against France in Le Tournoi.
Yeah. Are we going into his international career already?
Well,
unprecedented.
We're just mixing it up.
Yeah, fair enough. That was a great hit.
Thanks. Mm.
The most overwhelming, memorable image of that goal was the ball boy who flinches.
Yeah.
About 20 yards away from him. You know, I mean, there's been a lot said about that goal, but it was a magnificent hit.
That was a weird tournament to start with.
England won it. That's why it was weird.
but that just gave it something that was memorable. But it was such a mental tournament. Where did this come from?
Yeah, it was England, Brazil,
where has
France.
Where has it gone?
Yeah.
You know, well, that's it. We won it. And was everyone was like, no, we can't have that. It was a little, that'll be the holders next time.
It was a little warm-up for the World Cup, wasn't it?
98 World Cup, yeah it was.
And that's why England didn't win the World Cup, because they'd already won Le Tournoi. Yeah. Like, they won exactly. The big one.
Yeah, exactly. At least it's like winning Queens is better than winning Wimbledon.
Yeah, they didn't want to win the winding down tournament afterwards. But no, that was a great hit from Roberto Carlos. They also, I think I'm right in saying, it may not have been specifically that tournament, but around that time for Brazil, I remember him smashing a free kick from a long way out, and it hit the crossbar,
yeah.
And it flew out again. And when it came back in again, the crossbar was still moving.
Yeah.
You could see that rain coming off it.
Yeah. When he, for that free kick, they asked him, you know, oh, people were analysing it, going, well, it's because he's hit this side of the ball, and it's because he's done that. And
hit the valve or something.
Yeah, and they asked him, and he went, I don't know how I've done this.
And smacked it.
He really did. He just admitted it.
He had a very distinctive run-up, didn't he?
Yes. A long run-up.
Yes.
But, I mean, have you got the stats on the size of his thighs? They were absolutely incredible.
Put both of his thighs together.
Yeah.
And then times that by 5.
Yeah.
And that's about the size of one of
them. Now, take away the number you first thought of. Apparently, his left...
favourite vegetable.
The report I read at the time, I'm not sure it's still the case, so I wouldn't want to cast aspersions on this dwindling thighs. I'm sure they're still very muscly.
Mm.
Even at the ripe old age of 37 or whatever he is. His left thigh was 32 inches. That was the report I read.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, which is, you know, bigger than my waist. Almost, didn't
that all start from like some Panini sticker album, like the back used to have facts about the players, and wasn't it a bit of a misnomer that he was actually that big?
How
could it be 32 inches? That's mental. He's smaller than
I'm
me.
I'm just putting it out there, don't shoot the messenger. That's all I'm saying. It's bigger than your whole body, Pete.
What,
his left leg. You could fit your entire body into his thigh.
I could sort of sleep in it like a sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It'd be more like a hammock, wouldn't it?
I'm going to move on. hang on. I said I have another question. I'm going to be unconventional. Hmm. Favourite Roberto Carlos goal?
Yeah. Well, he's hit an amazing one from the corner flag.
Yes, Madrid. I'm glad you said that. Yeah. When he was running down the wing
for
Real Madrid, and he smashed it right across. That was an unbelievable goal.
I don't know how it went in.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Good call. I'm going to go for a free kick he scored for Brazil against Argentina. Now, I think Brazil lost 3-1. They were 3-0 down at the time, and I think it was in Argentina. And it was about sort of 30 yards out. And it was angled. He hit it across the wall into the goalkeeper's side.
Yeah.
Top corner. But he hit it so fast, the keeper was just nowhere near it.
Any number of free kicks, though, from Roberto Carlos. It's worth remembering that he was taking the free kicks in the side of Zidane, Figo, Beckham and Ronaldo in. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, people said his free kick record wasn't that good overall. I mean, he did take quite a few, but I mean, he scored a few memorable ones as well.
Like
Jimbo said, he must have been reasonably highly rated if he was sort of taking them ahead of some other very, very talented footballers.
He played at World Cup 98 and was a runner-up with Brazil, of course. But in 2002, they won the tournament and beating Germany 2-0 in the final.
Brazil were... Wow, they were the best team in that tournament, and he was a massive part of that. I mean, he played well against England, if I remember rightly, as well.
Mm. But he was, and for Real Madrid in Europe, he was just one of those players that you'd just see him in the Champions League, whether he'd be creating something. Oh, he created the goal for Zidane.
It was
the cross.
Yeah.
Just putting in solid performances all the time.
Well, he and Raul had a routine, didn't they? Where it was just a very, very simple, he would do a long throw, Raul would run onto it and score. Just the most simple, the most simple thing you could think of. And they did that so many times. They just had it worked out between themselves so well.
It's worth pointing out that, you know, how... Roberto Carlos was a special footballer. But if he was playing for a nation that didn't have the attitude of, oh, we're going to play him because he's brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, if he was English, for example, would he play? Because unless you're playing that formation, England would be very sort of reluctant to play someone who's not a sort of traditional left back.
Yeah.
Or when they wouldn't want to play him at midfield, in left midfield, whatever. Because he's a wing back, really, isn't he?
Mm. I really think it is the case that he just wouldn't be English.
You
wouldn't have a player.
He
like
wouldn't
that
exist.
Through.
Yeah, no,
that's right. That's right. In 2006, he set a club record for Real Madrid for most league matches played by a non-Spanish-born player. He made his 330th appearance, which broke the previous record held by Alfredo Di Stefano.
Not bad company, is it?
Yeah, you see. In the World Cup 2006, Brazil were, of course, eliminated by France in the quarter-final. By Brazilian standards, that's
a poor,
slightly weaker sort of Brazil side.
Yeah.
I didn't realise this, but he was blamed heavily by the fans and local media for Brazil's elimination because he failed to mark Thierry Henry when he scored the only goal of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was incredible, really. The fact of the matter is they had one shot on goal the whole game, and yeah. Zidane bossed them.
Yeah. Another interesting fact about that goal is that's the only time Henri and Zidane ever linked up to score.
Really?
Yeah. Good fact.
And Henri's the all-time leading scorer, and obviously Zidane's yeah. a huge icon.
It's funny how certain players get blamed for certain things, but others don't at all, isn't
yeah.
it?
Mm.
Sometimes they think stick. You know, Ginola got yeah. pilloried, didn't he, for France?
Both losing the ball and then...
Yeah.
Letizia for England.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do remember...
entirely justified in that case.
But I do remember against Denmark in 98 when Brazil beat them 3-2. They were 2-1 up. And Carlos tried like an overhead kick to clear it, completely fluffed it, and Brian Laudrup controlled it and smashed it in the net. Yeah. Not one of his better moments. No. Unfortunately, Rivaldo got them out of jail yeah. there. But he said about that, he said, I was sad because there are more than 20 players in a team in the squad. And I was the one taking the blame for what happened. He said, that bothered me. I'm respected in Europe, but I wanted to be respected in my own country.
It's all a bit silly, isn't it?
It's quite
it?
Sad,
yeah.
really.
Yeah, it is, know. Yeah.
In 2007, he announced that he was not going to renew his contract with Real Madrid when he moved to Turkish side Fenerbahce.
Well, I thought he was going to go back to Brazil then, but I think, as we were talking about off mic slightly earlier, that he had a few money problems, and those sort of Turkish clubs do pay really well. So
right.
he probably earned more there than he would have done going back to Brazil straight away.
I mean, he did pretty well for Fenerbahce. They in the 2007-2008 Champions League, they reached the quarterfinals, you know, which is great going, and they knocked Sevilla out on the way. They were edged out by Chelsea 3-2 and
I remember that, yeah.
But he did win the Turkish Super Cup a couple of times with Fenerbahce, so he had a bit of a success there. And he was loved by the fans. They were singing "I Love You, Carlos" and giving him a standing ovation when he left there. And on December the 15th, 2009. He was going back to Brazil to play for Corinthians to link up with Ronaldo.
Yeah.
I think. And Edu, of course.
It's a mouthwatering prospect. It's a mouthwatering prospect.
I had no idea that Edu was there.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're really going for it.
It's their centenary year, isn't it?
It's their centenary year. And they take that really, really seriously. Mm. It's massive business, the centenary.
Yeah, every 100 years.
Yeah.
Well, it's come along every day, does it?
Well, but like in England, it's not that big a deal. But in Brazil, it's absolutely huge stuff. And they've never won the Copa Libertadores. Mm. And they're one of the few... In fact, I think they're the only big club in Brazil that's never won it. So they're really, really absolutely... You know, centenary year.
Getting up
they're
for
buying
it,
a... You know, they've got some big names in... Yeah. And he said, I'm anxious to get to Corinthians, pull the shirt onto my body, hear the crowd, and to make history alongside Ronaldo. Mm. And also, apparently, he's going to be given the number 6 jersey.
Oh, okay, right. That's where he used to go for Brazil, isn't it?
Mm. That's right, yeah. That was his number. And he hasn't given up hope of playing at the 2010 World Cup.
Imagine they pick him, Adriano, Ronaldo,
Ronaldinho,
Rivaldo,
Roger Miller comes out of retirement, Stoichkov. Yeah. Just an old boys World Cup would be class.
I think we'd all like to see that, in fairness.
That would be great, wouldn't it?
They should have like one running concurrently, sort of the Masters World Cup.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But not with an indoor blue pitch.
No. No. England could have like Steve Hodge, Gary Stevens.
It'd be super. It'd be superb. He's 36 now, and he's hoping to play at the World Cup. But the left back spot's actually the only position that they don't really know what they're doing there. And he's got a good relationship with Dunga.
Oh, he wouldn't have done. They know each other very well. If they get on,
never
they never know.
Chaps.
If it was Maradona, he'd be picking him. We can all believe that.
Well, he said that the World Cup is the most important competition in the world, and taking part was the most important thing that happened in my life. And he said when he won the World Cup, he said at that moment, memories of my family, friends and my country came flooding into my head. There was memories of 1973, the place I was born, my friends, the tough times. I didn't give a moment's thought to the fact that I'd played for all these different clubs. I just remembered where I came from and how I'd worked my way up. From the Brazilian team to the Copa America Confederations Cup. He said, I had to keep going up and up and up, and that took a long time. Mm. And he said, if he's ever having a bit of banter with his mates, he often says, guys, do you know how much the World Cup weighs? I do.
I bet he doesn't. I bet he knows what it feels like.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I hope that does actually happen. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's also nice to see that to these sort of players, the World Cup is still the absolute pinnacle, you know. Yeah. There's been a bit of talk of the Champions League's much more important, but it's not really. The World Cup is the one, do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. But for my money, the best thing he's ever won was the Golden Foot Award.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the Golden Foot? We talked about it.
Yeah.
Get your the feet moulded and you're on the promenade in Monaco.
He's in there, is he?
He's in there. And if he's in there, he's in the Dean Wendat's Hall of Fame.
Welcome.
Come on in, Roberto Carlos.
I liked how the Fenerbahce fan said, I love you, Carlos, instead of we love you, Carlos.
I love you, Carlos. They were singing individually as well.
Yeah, I quite like that.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the show. I hope you've enjoyed yourselves. If you want to get in touch, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com and our website is thefootballramble.com. There's RambleTube videos up there of things we've talked about on the show. It's just a delicious experience. leaves me to ask you chaps, any notices?
I wanted to take a moment out to apologise to the winners of the Championship Manager goodie bags that haven't received them yet. One thing or another, sort of, you know, the posters dropped before Christmas, then Christmas, then the weather we've been having, has all conspired to mean that they've not received them yet, some of them. Don't panic, you will be getting them. No one's going to miss out, you'll all get one. We'll speed it up as quick as we can, and they're on their way to you now. So, yeah, sorry about that. It'll be fine. It will be fine. You will get them, I promise.
I'd just like to take a minute. Just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Belair.
Belair. Tony Blair.
Tony Belair. But other than that, I'd also like to apologise for there was a bit of a mess up with old iTunes last week. So apologies if it flooded your inbox in iTunes with lots and lots of versions of the same podcast. But if nothing else, it did do our download figures very good.
So it was nothing to do with us.
It was some snow gremlins got into the computers and the computer's pipes. And clogged it up with sick. Bye.
See you, Pete.
Buy a t-shirt. See you later. Bye.
I think we should be leaving. Say goodbye again, Pete.
Goodbye. Betway.com/footballramble.
Goodbye, Lukey.
Goodbye, Lukey.
Goodbye, James or Jim.
Goodbye, everyone.
We are off to find an Indonesian Marcus Speller.
Okay.
Saddle up my horse.
In La Liga, Barcelona, good...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.